Each session we have of Bhagavad Gita study, I begin by sharing teachings from Yogacharya O'Brien that she offered in the past, and then I share a few comments and we have time for dialogue. And this teaching I'll share today was originally recorded on March 15th in 2023. So let us begin with a moment of prayer. Time of turning within. We acknowledge the radiant source of all that is. We acknowledge the gurus in this lineage of Kriya Yoga who have shared their commentaries on the profound teachings found in the Bhagavad Gita. We acknowledge our own soul nature. We open to the revelation of our innate wisdom. May that pour forth as a blessing in our life. Om, peace, peace, peace. We're continuing with chapter 2. Someday we will get to chapter 18. It might be the year 2030, but we will get there. Chapter 2 is a very important chapter. This is why we're spending so much time on it. And this section is about Lord Krishna's response to Arjuna's inquiry about what a person of steadfast wisdom looks like. What are they like? So, a quick review of verse 55 that says, "The blessed Lord spoke. One who leaves behind all desires emerging from the mind, Arjuna, and is contented in the self, by the self, then that person is said to be one whose wisdom is steady." So, as we look at these verses, one crucial thing to keep in mind is that piece that says contented in the small self by the true self. Because we're going to look at this teaching about renunciation, about renouncing passion, agitation, and attachment. And you may wonder, what is that like? Without that, what are we left with? Well, we're left with the fullness of the self, contented in the self by the self. This is really a description of delight, what it's like to live in the perfect joy of self-knowing, to be unruffled by circumstances because we are anchored in that divine self. And we remember that the self that this verse is referring to is the divine self, our essential being, which is Satchit-Ananda, existence, consciousness, and bliss. You know, the scriptures say, from joy we came, in joy we live and move and have our being, and to joy we return. This is a description of steadfast wisdom as abidance in that perfect joy of self-knowing. And verse 55 told us about that steadfast wisdom. It told us that to have steadfast wisdom requires renunciation, leaving behind all desires that cloud the mind and interfere with our ability to live in delight. To live in the soul, to be guided by our essential self. And of course, this has to do with having clarity in the faculty of discernment. It's not clouded by restless thoughts. Therefore, it can be receptive to our innate knowledge and wisdom. The renunciation referred to here, leaving behind desire emerging from the mind, is a natural unfolding or outpicturing of the knowledge, experience, and realization of our essential spiritual nature, which is complete, which is whole, which is full. We're freed from that seeking to add something on. Abiding in our true self frees us from the drives of an ego-based identity. The ego's function of creating a sense of separate self-identity is supported by desire. That's what props it up. Ever separate, according to this function of mind. That part of us is always unfulfilled. Thus, it is continually seeking something else for fulfillment. And if you're a student of the Yoga Sutras, you'll remember that the first chapter identifies that there are two directions that our attention and awareness can flow. It can flow towards sensory or mental activity, which creates forgetfulness of the self, or attention and awareness can be engaged in self-knowledge, self-remembering. And this is also what we see in this verse in the Gita. The key understanding here is about our ability to renounce desires. You might wonder, well, how does that even happen? How do we renounce all desires? And this verse makes clear that all desires are emerging from the mind. This is a very important distinction to be aware of. All desires are emerging from the mind. Where is the desire coming from? Not from the essential self. The essential self is free of desire. Desires are emerging from the mind. And that means we have the capacity to release these desires because they are not inherent. They are not innate to the essential self. They're products of the mind. However, I think that this verse and the ones following it can seem paradoxical, as is sometimes the case with yoga philosophy. And the seeming paradox that we hear that abidance in the self is available to one who has released all desires of the mind, the ability to release all desires of the mind comes about through samadhi or conscious abidance in the self. And this reminds me of the dilemma that arises when a person is trying to get their first job. What qualifies you for a job? What qualifies somebody for a job? Well, experience. How do you get experience? You have a job. So before we weary ourselves with that circular wisdom, it's good to remember that these verses are offering a description of one who is enlightened or a person of steadfast wisdom, and they are intended to point out practices for us. The practices suggested in this verse are superconscious meditation and renunciation of restless desire. It's always helpful to look at the Gita in practical terms. What are some of the ways that we can enhance our ability to meditate super consciously and to reduce or renounce desires? Well, first, it's really useful with your daily meditation to intend to meditate super consciously. Yogacharya O'Brien's guru, Roy Eugene Davis, a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, would instruct us to intend to meditate to the point of super consciousness or absolute clarity. And Paramahansa Yogananda would say, don't stop short of samadhi, of that experience of super consciousness. He noted that many meditators stopped meditating at the point where he was just beginning. So make your intention to dive deep and to experience super consciousness. Remember, because it's natural, it's innate to what we are, we can experience that. So when we sit to meditate each day, we can begin with a clear intention to experience super consciousness. And we don't put that forth as an attachment to a particular experience, but we intend that as a way of focusing our attention and awareness on the highest goal. It's also useful, again, to remember that we can do this because it is our essential nature. We're not trying to add on anything. We're not trying to create anything. We're not trying to get somewhere. It's simply an intention to be fully present to the truth of what we are. And we experience super consciousness when thought activity that obscures our awareness is removed. So that's number one. Meditate super consciously. And number two, secondly, regarding reducing and renouncing desires, I think it's useful to become a desire sleuth, a detective who is tasked with discovering what has stolen or may steal away your freedom and your joy. What has obscured or will obscure your ability to be anchored in your true self? So here are a few specific practices for that. One, of course, again, meditate every day and set your goal to meditate super consciously. This clarifies the mental field, our faculty of discernment, which then allows us to have clear insight about renunciation of desires. And then the second thing, importantly, is observing the arising of desires, not just in meditation, but throughout your day, throughout your activity. Be aware of desires that arise in the mental field and discern what they are and where they are coming from. Ask some good questions about them. Be compassionately curious. Be compassionately curious. Make it a game. What is this? Where is it coming from? What does it serve? And then practice reducing your desires. Notice them. Breathe, let them go if they're not important or if they're a distraction. Staying aware of our higher purpose in life, our Dharma, our North Star, staying aware of this can be an important guide to renouncing useless desires. We can ask ourselves, about our dharma, about our higher purpose, and then connect our lifestyle choices and daily activities to that higher purpose as our guide, which is to ask ourselves, do my choices and my everyday activities support that higher purpose? Do they support what I'm really looking for in life? Do they bring me closer to that goal of steadfast wisdom, enlightenment, liberation, freedom? Do they bring me closer to that, or do they take me further away from my goal? Make it a game. We have this wonderful opportunity for discernment about desires to help us reduce them. And then, thirdly, of course, practice good self-care regularly. Do what is supportive of your well-being. Develop healthy habits one at a time, because being moderate in your approach is best, because steady progress is best. We know that when we're centered and have been practicing good self-care, it's easier for us to work with desire that arises. We train the mind, the senses, one step, one habit at a time, and we're strategic about it. Yoganandaji recommended keeping a spiritual diary, and I think that's a good practice to note our intention at the beginning of the day, and then at the end of the day to track our progress, just with an intention to increase our awareness. So these are some of the ways that we can become more conscious of the activity of desire in the mind and how it's connected to how we are living. And then verse 56 says, one whose mind is not agitated in misfortune, whose desire for pleasures has disappeared, whose passion, fear, and anger have departed, and whose mind is steady, that one is said to be a sage. One whose mind is not agitated in misfortune, whose desire for pleasures has disappeared, whose passion, fear, and anger have departed, and whose meditation is steady, that one is said to be a sage. So this verse further describes what it's like to be anchored in self-realization, free from being tossed about by conditions, either external circumstances or thoughts and emotions arising in our own mental field, being free of that. It's a description of liberation of consciousness. As Paramahansa Yogananda described it, he said, such a person is free to live in the soul, free to follow the dictates of the soul, rather than being a slave to the reactive patterns in the mind. Think of this: to be free from anxiety, free from fear, free from worry. When misfortune comes or upset comes, that is good. Then we look at the other piece of this verse, to be free from the desire for pleasures. And with that, maybe a question comes, is that good? Wouldn't life be dull? Well, obviously, the goal is not to have a dull life. It's not to have the senses dulled or the mind dulled or to be unfeeling or uncaring. What this is pointing to is freedom. That we're no longer driven by external desires, but we're free to choose wisely which is best. That which contributes to peace, to freedom, to joy, to complete well-being. So this is a description of a calm mind that is free from chasing after pleasures or trying to run away from fear or being goaded to frustration and anger. Now that sounds really good, doesn't it? If you've ever taken up the spiritual discipline of freeing yourself from a desire and succeeding with that, you know the joy that comes with that freedom. So it all starts with the yearning for freedom. We see that something has taken hold of us, and we don't want that. We want to be free of it. So we become aware that we're doing something or thinking of something that is not a healthy choice. It's not consistent with our overall health or our spiritual well-being. And we make a decision to renounce it, to let it go. And if it's not an established, deep-rooted habit or addiction, then just the decision to let it go can be enough if it's not deep rooted. But if it is an ingrained pattern in the mind, then it requires both discipline and a spiritual program to release it. It's not just a matter of making up the mind through self-will. But it's entering into spiritual awareness that's going to change the mind, that's going to uproot that pattern that's based in ignorance, that pattern that's based in the ego. So we need both the discipline of renunciation and the spiritual program to release it. And there are many ways that people do that. They do it through yoga study. They do it through 12-step programs, through prayer and meditation, which is always essential. They do it through support groups, through therapy, and so forth. They stop the behavior. They get support for their decision and for the spiritual transformation that it requires. They study and learn about how to counteract old ways of thinking and how to avoid pitfalls. So, if you've ever gone down this road, you know what this is like. You know what it's like. After a period of abstinence, of staying away from that desire, then the desire fades away. And when the desire is completely removed from the mind, completely removed, then it's possible for us to be around whatever it was without having that desire arise. That's freedom. That's really great. But short of it being fully removed from the mind, that desire will be activated by proximity of what the habit was or what we were attached to. It's not just stopping the behavior that's important. It's removing the imprint from the mind. Okay, sidebar. We all know what it was like when we were young, hopefully not as adults, but when we were young, we had our first love. We had our first love, and we thought, this is it. This is the one for all of eternity. This is the one we're going to be together forever. And then something happened, and they said, or you said, I'm done. I'm out of here. We can remember what it was like. Probably we were in high school for some, maybe junior high or maybe college. And we were forced to see that person from time to time. We had classes together, or our lockers were near one another. If we still had a desire to be with that person, or a friendship that fell away, and that desire was not uprooted, was not removed, whenever we were in proximity to that person, when we would see them, we would go bananas. What are they doing talking to that other person? What's wrong with them? How come they don't notice me, right? So we can all remember what that was like to not have it completely removed. And we would get angry at them and at ourselves, perhaps. So Yogacharya goes on and she says, when passion and fear depart, anger goes with them. And the Gita teaches us that anger is a result of thwarted desire. It's, like a toddler not getting what they want. When we're free from passionate craving for what we want or fear of losing what we have, then anger does not arise. So this verse describes a mind that is free, where any ingrained patterns have disappeared. They have departed. Then what? Then freedom. Absolute freedom. We're not driven by patterns in the mind, but we're guided by the light of the higher self. The Sanskrit word in this verse, translated to sage, is muni, which also means silent one. And it's not that the person doesn't speak. These verses address how one does speak, but it means that the mind is silent. The mind is silent. The mind is peaceful. The mind is non-reactive. When the mind is peaceful like that, we can cooperate with the infinite. We can follow divine will or be surrendered in the stream of divine grace. It requires a quiet mind to be able to do that. And Yogacharya's guru would describe this as our ability to be in the right place at the right time. It's a way of effortless living because we're free from selfish desires, free from the feeling of being compelled or driven. Now that sounds really great, right? Free. And then verse 57 continues with this theme, saying, one who is without attachment on all sides, encountering this or that, pleasant or unpleasant, neither rejoicing nor disliking, that person's wisdom stands firm. So all these verses are Lord Krishna's response to the second part of Arjuna's question, how does the person of steady wisdom speak? Our consciousness is revealed in our speech. Our consciousness is revealed in our speech. What we say, how we say it, what interests us or not, what we talk about. What's going on the mind in the mind comes out of the mouth. What's going on in the mind comes out of the mouth. Our words are a manifestation of our mental state. In this verse, it's clear that the sage, one who is established in wisdom, neither praises nor blames. Does not take sides, does not argue, This one is established in the fullness of self-knowing. So they have nothing to prove. Such a one is a really deep listener, a witness. They emanate peace and bring light into any conversation. The one who is wise sees the ever-changing nature of things. So I want to close with a familiar story for many of you. That's a really good one for learning how to develop discernment and the renunciation of restless desire that discernment can bring. There once was a man who lived with his family in a small village out in the country, and they were farmers. And this man had a son to help him, and he had a beautiful workhorse. And his neighbors were envious of what he had and came to his home to say to him how fortunate they thought it was to have his son to help him with the farm and to have such a strong and fine horse to help him plow the field. "How lucky you are," they exclaimed to him. "How lucky you are, and how fortunate you are." And the man gently responded to his neighbors, "Well, it's too soon to tell." And sure enough, not long after that, the man's prized horse escaped from the corral and was nowhere to be found. And with this news, the neighbors came back and lamented, "Oh, you are so unfortunate now that this has happened. Your horse is gone and can't help you plow the field." And once again, the man said to them, "Oh, it's too soon to tell." Then, within a few days, his strong horse returned with a beautiful mare at his side. Now the man had two horses, and those villagers, came back and said, "Wow, it's so hard to believe how fortunate you are. Now you have two horses to help you." And the farmer once again said, "Well, it's too soon to tell." And the farmer's son set out to train the mare so she could also help with the farming. And in the process, he was thrown off the horse and broke his leg. And you know what happened? The villagers came right back and said, "Misfortune has surely come to your house. Now your only son cannot help you." And you know what the farmer replied? "It's too soon to tell." And a short while after this, a war broke out in the neighboring village, and all the young men were called to fight in this war. But the farmer's son with a broken leg could not go to war. So back come the villagers to declare how amazingly fortunate you are. And the farmer said, "It's too soon to tell." So we can look at this story as representing our awakened discernment that is calm and clear. And just as it's too soon to tell. It just tells us that. And the sense mind we can see in this story as that group of villagers that's moving from one extreme to the other. Oh, how fortunate. Oh, how unfortunate. So we have the opportunity to abide in the fullness of the self, to be calm and clear regardless of circumstances. It's too soon to tell. And may it be so with us. So I look forward to our next session when we turn to verse 58, a primer on the yoga practice of pratyahara, or control of the senses. Well, what is there left to say? It's too soon to tell. I have just a little bit to share or shine a different light on In these verses, in chapter 2, verses 56 and 57, Lord Krishna again describes the qualities of a person established in wisdom who is spiritually awakened. In 56, one who is not agitated by sorrow nor elated by happiness, who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady wisdom. And then in 57, chapter 2, one whose mind is not attached to anything, who has attained inner detachment from external experiences, who is free from clinging when experiencing good or bad, such a person has true wisdom. In our tradition of Kriya Yoga, these verses offer profound guidance for navigating times of change, conflict, or chaos. They remind us that true spiritual maturity is not measured by how well things are going around us, but by how well we remain anchored in the self, regardless of what is happening. Roy Eugene Davis described the goal of Kriya Yoga as the restoration of awareness to its original pure state. You know, he is well known for making volumes into one statement, the Cliff Notes. The restoration of awareness to its original pure state. And this state is one of inner freedom, where the soul is no longer tossed about by the opposites of praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and pain. In his commentary on the Gita, Royji writes, "The enlightened person is not emotionally reactive, nor is their sense of well-being determined by external circumstances or conditions. Their inner calmness is grounded in the realization of their true nature." So this kind of calmness is not indifference. It is the fruit of self-mastery, Atmajaya. Self-mastery and deep inner attunement. So, you know, in Kriya Yoga, we cultivate this inner steadiness through disciplined practice of meditation, ethical living, self-study, and devotion. And these practices help us withdraw our awareness from emotional reactivity and rest in the divine self, the changeless, the eternal witness within. And Yogacharya Umaji describes this steady state as the fruit of Kriya Yoga practice. She wrote in Living the Eternal Way, "Our freedom lies in realization. Our freedom lies in realization, not in changing circumstances, but in discovering what remains unchanged within us." So I think these verses are especially relevant now in a world that is filled with instability. When we face grief, uncertainty, or even righteous anger, the Gita calls us to a higher response. Not suppression of feeling, but liberation from identification with it. Liberation of identification with it. We're not told to pretend that pain or joy does not arise. Rather, we're called to remain centered as we observe these waves that come and go. And the practical tools, of course, that Kriya provides for us are these. Through meditation, we learn to abide in the stillness beneath all thought and emotion. And through ethical living, tapas, we relinquish attachments and open to grace. Through self-study, swadhyaya, and surrender to God, Ishwari Pranidhan, we shift our identity from the ego self to the essential self. So in this way, even during difficult times, we can live as instruments of peace. We do not deny the storm, but we become the calm eye within it. So I'll close with this affirmation from Yogacharya O'Brien. This is from Path of Wonder. I am anchored in the self, the higher self. I am anchored in the self. The winds of change do not uproot me. The light of the soul illumines my way. This is a very powerful affirmation, especially for this time in our nation, in our world, and for some of us in our personal lives. I am anchored in the self. The winds of change do not uproot me. The light of the soul illumines my way. So let us return again and again and again to that light within. And in doing so, we become not only peaceful for ourselves, but we become a source of peace for others in our world. Om. We have a little bit of time now for your insights. This is always such a good topic, isn't it? Renunciation. How do we let go? Especially in these troubling times. How do we let go? How do we not be overcome by righteous anger? How do we stay anchored in our true self? And we can do it. We can do it. We are doing it. You know, think about this. If or when you go to one of those marches, what will your sign say? Not dump truck. What will your sign say? Remember that our words, written and spoken, our words are a demonstration of our consciousness. How will your illumined consciousness be spoken? Does it seem like a lot going on in our world? Like, where do I even begin? We don't want to get numb about it, right? Like, it's so much, I'm just going to get numb and not even pay attention. We need to remain aware. Remember Uma's teaching, being anchored in ourself, in the light of ourself, does not mean that we become dull-minded. Think of Roy G, those who had the chance to know him or those who have read his books. Holy cow, he was informed about everything. Everything. And he was not tossed about by it. Same with the Umaji. So we have great examples. Mukti Devi.
Thank you so much for your teachings today, for sharing Umaji's and your own. I find so much peace in coming back over and over again to our closing prayer from morning puja. Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. May all beings in all the world be happy and free. I hold that in my heart for everyone, everyone, without exception, just everyone. And that is very grounding to me.
Thank you. That kind of sums it all up, doesn't it?
It's so easy sometimes for me to be angry or upset when something surprises me that's happening that it is not as troubling. If I come back to this, it comes to and from my heart. It's not my heart that's being so upset, and it just returns me back to that highest part of myself so that I can live in faith and or find it again if I have momentarily lost it in anger about something. I just come back to it because I believe that with all my heart, that is there. That is our highest potential, and we can do that simply by living in it ourselves.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful reminder. And in this teaching that Umaji offered, she was very clear about the distinction between these sort of reactive patterns in our mind being either sort of at the surface level where we can just decide, oh, that doesn't really work. I'm not going to do that anymore. And it's easy, we can let it go. And then there's the other end of it where it's a samskara. It's deeply rooted, something that's deeply rooted in our consciousness, in our mind, that we need to make a decision, I'm going to let it go, and we need the support of a spiritual practice that's intentional to change our consciousness. So that deep-rooted samskara can be burnt and we can be free of it. So in these trying times, what Uma's teaching, if we reflect back on it, is telling us it's a profound opportunity for us at times of agitation, anger, upset, wonder. It's a profound opportunity to look deeply within and see where that anger is coming from, that anxiety, that fear, whatever it is, in our consciousness. So we can dig it up. We can do our part to dig it up and release it. So we're working from both sides. Like Mukti Devi shared, we're sharing these beautiful prayers. We're seeing the divine in everyone. We're knowing that everyone is doing the very best they can, even if we completely disagree with what they're doing. In their mind, they're doing the very best they can. It's hard to believe, but it is true, even if we disagree with it. So we can work from the outside in with this understanding about what's going on around us and the prayer, and that's really important. And Uma said that. Prayer is really important. And we have this opportunity to also work from the inside through our spiritual practice to release this samskara forever. Such profound opportunity. And if you are ever in contact with any other human being, these opportunities arise, right? If you're ever truly in relationship in any way with any other human being, they are going to mess up terribly at one point or another. They're going to push our button. Then we can go, yes, that button got pushed. Now let's really be a detective. Let's be a desire sleuth. Let's dive in and see what is the root of that. Let it be freed so our soul can shine forth. Wow. So many opportunities right now. Okay, we have Vivica and then another if desired. Oh, not desired.
Thank you, Sundari, for sharing Umaji's teachings and for your own insights. Always, it's a very rich time. I'm really glad to be able to do this with everyone. My sign would say love wins,
Oh.
and like love wins. That's it. And I just recently, with the passing of our Pope, watched the movie Conclave. Because I was just curious, like, what's going on in this whole thing? It's kind of wonderfully mysterious, right? And I took a couple notes because it's so applicable to what we're going through at this time. And I'm going to change a word here and there, but one of the quotes that I took down was to be subject to one another out of reverence. And this is Saint Paul saying this, so he says out of reverence for Christ, but we could easily say out of reverence for truth, right? To be subject, to really understand, to have that compassion, to know that we are all doing our best. I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind. And it helps me stay grounded when I really hold the truth of that, because we are all doing our best, or we would be doing something else, right? And then I really, really liked, this has to do with the farmer and the too soon to tell. Some of the words that were shared had to do with certainty being the enemy of tolerance, and that our faith is a living thing precisely because it walks hand in hand with doubt. And we're just, this is just right where we are. We're in the middle of like wondering what is happening right now. And it's just too soon to tell, right? And I just love, if there was only certainty and no doubt, there'd be no mystery. And there would therefore be no need for faith.
Oh.
Yeah. And so the next line was, let us pray to God will grant us a pope or a leader who doubts. It's
Oh.
not so certain, right? It's just that certainty tries to put a ground under us that isn't the real ground of the true self. So.
Right. It's the difference between being the leader that says, I can fix everything. I am the one.
Right.
I can fix everything. It's the difference between that and I'm not sure how this is going to happen, but I'll stand here in faith. I saw that movie some time ago, and I thought, okay, this weekend I'm going to watch it again. It's really a profound
It is.
movie, and of course there are millions of people around the world, Catholics and those who are not Catholics, who are mindful of what's going on right now with the passing of this Pope. And it's shocking that he was the first Jesuit Pope in history. So without being I do have a desire for another Jesuit Pope who's about the people rather than the organization, but we'll wait in the mystery.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing those quotes and the encouragement. Okay, we have time for one more before we conclude. So nice to see you all. Don't you love when people have their cameras on and you get to see one another? And I understand some of you aren't able to do that. I don't like it, but I understand it. So I'm glad you're here. And this is a very, I feel this is a very special time that we get to have in community. And I know because some of you have shared. And because I know who you are and what you're doing, that you're doing very profound work and you're on the front lines, politically or with caring for those in need or being spiritual leaders, or even on the front line of consciously bringing your light into the world in any way that you can. We all are on the front line in some way. And so I honor that in you, and I honor the courage in you. And when I see you, I think, wow, look at our team. Holy smokes. If only the Warriors had this consciousness, they could have won last night. Sorry if I blew that for anyone. I wouldn't watch it if you've missed it. What a team. What a team we have of light bearers means something else in the world, but you know what I mean, of those committed to shining our light, bringing ripples of peace into the world. So I bow to you, I honor you, and I'm grateful to walk this path and be on this journey with you all. Have a blessed day, and I look forward to our time together next week, and to wow, what is Uma going to share with us? It's going to be about Pratyahara. Pratyahara. Om.